This episode is brought to you by HivePass. HivePass is the latest in membership management software that brings a radically different approach to how members join your organization, their experience as a member, and how you interact with them. Built by not only an app developer, but also a mountain biker, HivePass was made by a trail user for trail users. With an app-based platform, instant digital membership cards, ability to send push notifications to members, in-app trail status reports unique to your organization, HivePass is building the next generation of membership management software for your organization. Future additions to HivePass include an event system, automated custom trailhead signs, and much more. HivePass has been live in New Zealand and Australia for a few years, but just launched in Canada, and with this announcement, the United States. Over 50,000 trail users already use HivePass to support their local trail organization. HivePass is the world's first app-based membership management software built specifically for trail organizations. For all of the details, check out hivepass.app. That's www.hivepass.app. Or download the HivePass app today. You're listening to Frontlines, a podcast for the people that truly make mountain biking happen. Not the riders, racers, or product designers, but the builders, advocates, and the often forgotten board members of your local mountain bike trail association. I'm really excited to bring you this episode for two reasons. Number one, I think the Trail Research Hub is a really interesting organization, and you'll hear more about them. And number two is that the Waterloo Cycling Club and the trails that they build and maintain at the Hydrocut in Kitchener, Ontario are my hometown trails. They are the first purpose-built mountain bike trails I ever rode, and I believe that if it wasn't for those trails being in my hometown, I never would have moved west, I never would have chosen the profession that I'm in, and I probably wouldn't have created this podcast. Not only are the trails of the Hydrocut great, but one of the local breweries in Kitchener has a Hydrocut beer. I found that beer after learning about the Trail Association. It's a great beer, but the brewery is also a co-op, and it's doing wonderful things from a social aspect. The brewery is so great that my dad and uncle have actually become co-op owners, and if you ever stop by there, there's a good chance you'll see an older version of me named Rob or Dennis pouring pints and telling stories, whether you want to hear stories or not. So if you do find yourself in Kitchener-Waterloo, ride the trails, grab a beer, and say hi to some friendly Hilliers. I could gush for hours, so without any further delay, I'm your host, Brent Hillier, and this is episode 92 of Frontlines. I'm joined today by Dr. Kelsey Johansson, chair of the Trail Research Hub. She joins me out in Joensuu, Finland right now, where she's doing some research. Hi, Kelsey. Thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined by Brent Ellis, who's the chair of the Waterloo Cycling Club Trail Committee. He's from Waterloo, Ontario. Hi, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
So to begin, let's start with you, Brent. Let's just hear a little bit about the Waterloo Cycling Club and the Hydrocut Trails. How long have they been around for? How did they get started? And when did you get involved with the organization?
Well, the Waterloo Cycling Club dates back to the 1960s. So I think, you know, we're approaching 50 years roughly. And then obviously it was a big road cycling club for years or decades. And then in the 90s, I guess late 80s, but more the 90s, people started to mountain bike. And I was one of those mountain bikers. And at that point, we started to have organized mountain bike rides. And then there was also a place which we called the Hydrocut. Some people took it upon themselves to build trails in those forests. And in particular, in the late 90s, I won't name names, but there was some guys that decided to build, because obviously mountain biking and the North Shore features, all those, it kind of came to a head. But around 2000, some landowners, you know, noticed that this was happening, and the region got wind of this. And this is where I got involved, is we started to advocate with the cities in the region that we wanted to have like a mountain bike designated area where we could actually build legitimate trails. And so we started to correspond with the city of Kitchener, city of Waterloo, and the region of Waterloo. And so part of our pitch to them was, let's localize it. Let's have a recreation forest and localize all the activity in one forest. And that will get rid of people doing all this illegal building, because it would focus everything in one area. And then at that same time, a new gentleman started at the region by the name of Albert Hoving. He was an environmental planner with the region. And so his main objective was to look after all the regional forests. Fortunately for him, he was up in the Bruce Peninsula for an IMBA presentation. And then he met two people who worked for IMBA US, Mark Schmidt and Laura Woolner. And they were a part of the trail crew down in the United States. We didn't have an IMBA Canada yet. Albert started to correspond or talk to them about this idea or this proposal that we had made to start or to get the Waterloo Cycling Club involved in building trails on this regional land. Mark and Laura end up coming to the Hydra Cut and doing a trail school one day. And that was a big step moving forward to get us established in that forest. Mark and Laura from IMBA did a strategic planning session with us, where we sat down in two sessions and, well, obviously came up with a strategic plan, which is essentially a roadmap that we used to get us through the next, you know, 6-7 years. And then we started to implement that strategic plan. So we share our stewardship agreement a lot with people. And then we have building specifications. We decided to come up with our own building specifications because we thought, you know, the IMBA is good, but then we wanted to give more detail to our specifications.
Kelsey, can you tell us a bit about the Trail Research Hub? What is it? How did it start?
Sure. So the Trail Research Hub is a collective of individuals from academia and industry who work together on research, education, and outreach initiatives with the goal of supporting sustainable trail development, construction, and maintenance across Canada. And we work through a number of these initiatives to establish evidence-based best practice guidelines that help to support trail governance and management. And so while I'm the chair of the Trail Research Hub, there are a number of other members. We have Dr. Harvey Lemelin, who's a researcher with Lakehead University's School of Outdoor Recreation, Parks and Tourism in Thunder Bay, Ontario. We have Jane McCullough, who is a researcher and community liaison for the Maritimes. And we also have Kirsten Spence, who is a researcher and community liaison for Ontario. We have a guiding vision to be the central hub for trail research, information, and leadership in Canada. And our mission is to provide that central hub for the trails community to share information and resources, to foster collaborative research and innovation, and to create community through outreach and relationship building, including our wonderful relationship with the Hydra Cut Committee.
How did you kind of get started with the Trail Hub?
I have been working in trails since the early 2010s. I'd started when I was a student in Lakehead University's School of Outdoor Recreation, Parks and Tourism, and took a Northern Ontario Heritage Fund Corporation funded internship with the Corporation of the Town of Marathon in Northern Ontario on the shore of Lake Superior. And while I was on my internship, I got really involved with the Voyageur Trail Association. And through the Voyageur Trail Association, I met Kirsten Spence, who at the time was the coordinator for Trans-Canada Trail Ontario, and was in a number of classes with Harvey Lemelin at Lakehead University. And through my relationship with Kirsten, I met Jane McCullough, who at the time was the National Director of Trails for the Trans-Canada Trail. Subsequent to the connection of the Trans-Canada Trail in 2017, both Kirsten and Jane moved into the private sector, working in consulting. And I went on to complete my master's and my PhD while studying overseas at the University of Otago in Dunedin, New Zealand. So I have a PhD in tourism studies from Otago. And when I moved back to Canada, I reconnected with Kirsten and with Jane and with Harvey, and we really identified the need for evidence-based decision-making within the trail sector. This connects in with a little bit about what Brent was talking about earlier, about how trails really grew as a grassroots initiative from amongst a cohort of individuals really passionate about their particular trail-based activities. And through the growth of those sectors, there's been a real move towards professionalization in mountain biking that's been really supported through the International Mountain Biking Association, or IMBA. But within other trail sectors, that's been supported by organizations like Trans-Canada Trail. But the majority of the focus has been on building and maintaining trails, and not necessarily focused on things like how trails can give rise to community economic benefits, how trails can be supported through evidence-based decision-making, what causes volunteers to want to engage with organizations, and how to avoid volunteer burnout while retaining the amazing volunteer community members that we have. And so as a researcher, and based on Kirsten and Jane's expertise, we decided it was really important to come together to share our collective expertise in a way that would directly serve the trails community in Canada.
There's a lot of organizations that kind of speak to certain benefits that trails offer, you know, the economic benefit, health benefits, all these things. But we, I think for a long time have lacked the science to actually be able to back up those statements. And so it's wonderful to kind of see an organization like this come out of it. How is the Trail Research Hub kind of funded in itself? Like it seems like a great initiative and it's great knowledge, but you know, how is it functioning from your end, right? Like where's the support for you?
So we work on a contract basis, for different organizations that we partner with. So for example, Kirsten and Jane both own their own private sole proprietorships, which are tourism consulting enterprises. And I chair the Trail Research Hub, which is incorporated as a sole proprietorship as well. But I also have an affiliation with Lakehead University's School of Outdoor Recreation, and here in Finland with the University of Eastern Finland. And through those academic relationships, I'm able to undertake research that is partially deferred in terms of the costs through those university partnerships. So for example, with a number of the research projects I've undertaken with the HydroCut, those have supported student engagement and learning, which for me is a really important part of cultivating the next generation of trail professionals. And these student projects allow students to engage in research, to take the theory that they learn in their research methodology courses, and some of the practical information they gather from working with an organization like the HydroCut, and turn it into something like a course project, a honors thesis, a master's thesis, or a PhD, which is in turn of direct service to an organization like the HydroCut. Or I partner with organizations like the Ontario Trails Council while I was a faculty member at the University of Waterloo, which is how I first got connected with the HydroCut. I ran a integrated curriculum design course, which allowed students to undertake a semester-long research project in partnership with trail organizations who we connected to through my position on the Ontario Trails Council. And this gave those trail organizations the opportunity to gather evidence to undertake a initiative of their choosing, whether that was something like strategic planning, a trail user engagement survey, a marketing and promotions campaign, or addressing issues centered around how to manage trail use during the COVID-19 pandemic. And that wasn't necessarily research that a non-for-profit organization with low or no paid employees could undertake on their own. And this also gave students the opportunity to engage in research that was directly beneficial to the communities that they were living in and help them gather the skills necessary to go on to future employment, hopefully in the trail sector or in other aspects of recreation and leisure programming and service delivery or tourism product development. Another way in which we are funded is through things like request for proposals. So this may be an organization that puts out a bid or a tender for research services, and we might respond to those tenders. Or we might be approached by an organization who's not really sure exactly how to secure the funds with them, and we may work with that organization to access grant funding with the understanding that if the grant is secured, a portion of those funds will go towards a research-based or evidence-based project or education initiative or outreach initiative that the Trail Research Hub supports.
The project with the HydroCut, it's an economic impact study.
Yes.
And you're currently in the middle of it, it looks like, from the timeline that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
How did kind of this get started, and where are you at right now with this process?
So the HydroCut initially was one of the organizations that participated in our winter 2020 integrated curriculum design course. And they had a student group who worked with them to design a trail user survey. Fast forward a few years, and the HydroCut was really successful in securing a bunch of other funding to build trails and didn't really have the resources available to implement that survey. And because some time had passed, it wasn't necessarily going to meet their current needs. And so they reached out to me and said, you know, are you still available? We'd like to expand on that trail user survey. We'd also like to know about the economic impact of the HydroCut Trails Network and how that's positively impacting the Kitchener-Waterloo community. And I said, I am available. And so in January 2024, we initiated the project. We began our economic impact data collection the following month. And then in March and April, there was a series of site visits. And I met with members of the trail committee, including Brent, to design the survey. And we really dug into what was going to be of most benefit for the HydroCut Trails to know about their trail system, about what the community envisioned as the future direction for trails, and also what was going to help me to assess the economic impact of secondary purchases associated with mountain biking that are generated or partially driven by the HydroCut. So that might be things like people coming to the region to use the trail system. That might be going to our local bike shops and purchasing either a new bike, components, parts, HydroCut merch, or having seasonal or annual maintenance done on their mountain bikes, etc. We then launched our survey in late May, and we've just finished the survey in mid-July. We're actually in the process of sending out notifications to our prize winners to thank those individuals who participated in the survey. We gave an opportunity for people to win one of three $100 merch gift certificates that could be redeemed for HydroCut merch that Brent was talking about earlier. And now that that survey has closed, I'm in the process of going through and doing all the nitty-gritty analysis to find out the economic impact of trails, to come up with a series of recommendations based on community input for future directions for the HydroCut in terms of trail builds, community volunteer engagement, event hosting, and all those other wonderful things that the community values about the HydroCut. So that analysis is ongoing, and I'm looking at beginning writing the report in October, and hopefully that will come out either late December 2024, early January 2025. So stay tuned for the results of that. We'll be pushing out some infographics across our shared social media platforms, as well as there'll be a final report that will be available to the HydroCut, and they can disseminate that to their community partners, including the Region of Waterloo, City of Kitchener, City of Waterloo, as well as their landowner partners.
Brent, I'm gonna pass it back over to you. I know the results of this survey are going to be put together in a report, and so you don't have that yet. But what is a survey like this kind of mean for the Trails Committee? What's it going to kind of do to help the trails at the HydroCut?
It's going to make us more legitimate in the eyes of the city and the region officials.
Yeah.
Because they obviously know that our trails exist. I mean, a lot of their employees and elected officials ride the trails because we didn't talk about our ridership, but, you know, we have trail counters. And during COVID, we went over 100,000 users in a year. So we're still really high. So we get a ton of users out there, but no one really knows how many users we have. I mean, that was something, we got trail counters in 2012, and it was someone's great idea. You know, we need data to show people. So having something like that to say, even like we have sponsors, so even to show to sponsors, but obviously for the region, because we deal with all the trails and we're all self-funded, but our two parking lots, we don't have any control over, or, you know, those access roads. So that's all the city or the region. And we could definitely use help in some of those areas, right? And then even expanding, obviously we're going to try to keep expanding with private landowners, but even expanding with on city property and region property, what Kelsey's doing for us will, it'll open more doors, I believe, and let us keep growing as a trail system, because it's, you know, there's all kinds of studies out there about the cost of infrastructure, like putting in a soccer field or putting in a hockey rink. Well, what we're doing costs the city or the region virtually nothing. And the benefits are huge. And that's going to be exciting, because then, you know, in Kelsey's survey, you know, we're going to know, I mean, we've done some informal surveys, so we kind of know where people come from, but we're going to know exactly where people are coming from. And we'll be able to say, you know, like a third of our ridership comes from outside the region, et cetera, and what kind of riders are coming. Because a lot of it is anecdotal. Like I'll talk to people out there, and there's families out there, and they come now with our trail system, like the types and the amount of trails that we have, people come from all over Ontario to ride. This economic impact assessment will help us, because we'll be able to actually use that in some of our grant applications as well.
I know, like my local trail association, we've done our membership surveys every year. Is there, you know, for me, I think, and I see this sometimes with working with the land managers, that they want kind of this like unbiased opinion. And so if I go out there as the trail builder and start asking questions of folks, and even if I do a really good job of doing a survey out there, it's still a survey that's done by the trail association. So Kelsey, is there more value to having kind of this third party come in and do this research as opposed to like a more grassroots led initiative?
There certainly is. There's a degree of third-party removal from the potential for bias when you have an independent organization come in and conduct that survey. But another one of the really great benefits is that it also frees up nonprofit, volunteer-based, with low or no employee organizations to continue doing what they're most passionate about and what their volunteers have the greatest skills and abilities in. So as someone who is passionate about trails and an active trail user, I also happen to be an academic and I have access to things like statistical analysis software, to large computing systems, to the ability to run economic impact forecasting that a nonprofit volunteer organization might not be able to do, particularly if they're depending on sort of free survey software in order to gather their data. So there's a degree of rigor in terms of the types of questions that is asked, the way that the statistical analyses unfold. And it also simultaneously enables an organization like the Hydrocut to take the recommendations that are based on evidence to their proponents, to their supporters, and tell a really convincing story that's based on evidence, that's backed by statistics, and that also presents the voice of the community, of the users, of the riders in this case, to those administrators, whether that's administrators from a funder, whether that's people working for a municipality, whether that's someone that you're actively negotiating a new land use agreement with or stewardship agreement with, and to say, you know, over the last 5 years, we've had this economic impact. We've grown our ridership by this. Our riders are now comprised of this percentage of more advanced riders and this percentage of newer and emerging riders. And as a result, we need to diversify the opportunities that we're providing, expand our trail system to keep everyone safe, to keep everyone engaged, and to keep having these positive economic, non-economic, public health-based benefits for our communities.
So something that you mentioned earlier, I'd love to kind of dive into a bit more. You talked about some research that was done with kind of volunteer burnout, and it's been kind of a constant theme of this podcast because myself personally, I feel burnt out often. I think Brent is like an exception to, he's been with the organization for 20 years. And so, you know, I think a lot of board members, you know, 3 years seems to be an average that's out there.
Yeah, a 3-year term seems to be an average.
Yeah,
Within sort of broad spectrum Canadian recreation and leisure or sport based volunteering, particularly at the board level. We may see people transition in and out of leadership roles depending on, for example, their own life stage. We do see a lot of parents get actively involved, particularly in sport-based volunteering that coincides with their children's progression through a sport. But we may see that peter off as children mature or perhaps no longer want their parents as actively involved in their recreation and leisure activities. But volunteer burnout is real. It is an ongoing problem, but there are things that organizations can do to help sort of really reduce the potential for that. And one of the key things is active involvement of volunteers in decision making. And that includes having ownership of how decisions are made, how trails are planned, for example, how events are hosted, what direction new trail builds take, and also how an organization shifts, changes, and evolves. And I think one of the great things that the Hydro Cut has done is to really actively embrace all of the wonderful ideas that are volunteered by their community members. When people are able to give back to an organization that they believe in an area where they have an existing skill set, whether it's for a finite period of time or in the long term, as is the case with Brent, then that really helps to keep passionate people engaged. And I think one of the things that an organization like the Trail Research Hub does through our student-based programs, through hosting interns, through hiring research assistants, through running university-based educational programming, is to cultivate that next cohort of trail professionals or trail volunteers so that we do have less likelihood of having volunteer attrition dramatically impact the viability of a trail organization. And that's one of the key factors that really can be challenging when a volunteer feels that they're burnt out and they want to take a temporary step back. They may feel pressured to stay with an organization for fear that it won't be viable anymore because there's no up-and-coming generation to replace them. So if we can really get the next group of volunteers actively engaged, if they can shadow more long-serving volunteer members, then that institutional knowledge doesn't get lost. And those long-standing volunteers can feel like they can take a moment, take a step back, recharge their batteries, know that the organization is in good hands, that they have been instrumental in training that next generation of individuals, and they can come back to their active, more active volunteering roles when they've had a chance to sort of recharge their batteries, maybe spend more time on the trails as opposed to building them, more time outside as opposed to in, you know, monthly Zoom meetings. But it really is a pressing issue that's impacting trails.
I think as being somebody that was born and raised in Kitchener-Waterloo, I'm always quite proud of Kitchener-Waterloo, but I think it's a community that's full of a bunch of really smart and knowledgeable people. And with the ability of the Hydro Cut to have access to folks that were on IMBA Trail Committee that started IMBA Canada, I always seem to find people from Kitchener-Waterloo in my life, even living out here on the West Coast. Even my premier, it was born in Kitchener-Waterloo here in British Columbia. And I think the Hydro Cut Trail Committee has really, the Waterloo Cycling Association Trail Committee has done a really good job of kind of tapping into those volunteers, but not every community has that. And so has there been any research done on what kind of paid staff can look like for a trail organization and how that can kind of shape and evolve an organization versus fully relying on volunteers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most common models that we see is a non-for-profit trail organization that is set up with an executive director. And that executive director oftentimes has to wear all of the hats. Mm-hmm. And that can be really challenging, particularly if that individual is only a part-time employee.
Yeah.
And so one of the key things in cases like that is having a really supportive and knowledgeable board where there is a clear strategic direction for how the board and the, in this case, single employee operate together, and where the different roles and responsibilities lie, how the board can support the executive director in terms of achieving the vision of the board and the membership. And other models may look slightly different. There may be, for example, a executive director who's part-time. There may be a administrative support assistant. There may be a subcontracted accountant or bookkeeper who takes on those roles and responsibilities. And so really, the structure of the organization is dependent on a few things. The first is how that trail association is established. Is it a non-for-profit organization or a registered charity? Or is it an incorporated for-profit organization? Those will have implications for how that organization is structured. And so will the constitution that's set out through the board of directors. Other possible avenues are to subdivide some of the particular activities that the board takes and to have a part-time employee who reports to a specific committee, whether that's, for example, a paid trail coordinator who does things like GIS mapping and is supported by the particular trails committee of a trail association. You may have, for example, a part-time graphic designer who supports the marketing, promotional, and social media committee. They might be involved with things like website design and updates in a paid capacity, running the social media campaigns in a paid capacity, generating material that's pushed out across those platforms. And they may also be having a role in creating a monthly, quarterly, or annual newsletter. And then you may have someone who takes on more of that executive director, chief financial officer role, who has a really formalized relationship with the board in terms of financial reporting and monthly meetings. So there's a number of different ways that that can sort of unroll or unfold. And it's really dependent upon how that organization is initially set up and also some of the tax laws and tax implications associated with the province or territory that it's operating from.
Brent, you mentioned a little bit about strategic planning and some of the help that you had with that. Why is strategic planning so important, and what did the Hydrica kind of do that really helped?
Well, so when we did our first strategic plan in 2016, it, like I said before, it obviously gave us focus and a map going forward. But then I think that would be one of the biggest things that has helped our trail system. But you talked before about, you know, trail systems or trail organizations. And I think that's my biggest takeaway in my 25 years of doing this is strategic planning is so important because there's so many moving parts and it's easy to get lost and get off track and then lose focus of important things. So much so that we did another strategic plan a couple of years ago because we're like, okay, we feel like we executed everything or got everything we wanted out of that first strategic plan, but what do we need to do going forward again? So we redid our strategic plan, which will, you know, probably last us another 5 or 6 years. But it's one of those great planning tools that gets everyone on the same focus, but it also opens your eyes to things you didn't think about. It just gives us direction.
Kelsey, do you see a lot of organizations having a strategic plan, or do you kind of see more organizations kind of, you know, just fumbling and figuring out as they go along?
I think it really depends on how new the organization is to the process and how far along their professionalization journey they are. We do get a number of requests for support, either from individual organizations with strategic planning or from a number of organizations that are interested in partnering together to create something like a regional trails committee to advocate for trails in their region beyond the single user group that they feel that they best represent. And oftentimes, that strategic planning process is a really great way to solidify the goals and objectives of the organization, its reason for being, and to codify that into a series of steps that will help the organization to achieve either a revitalization of its mandate or to sort of reconfigure how they're operating to better achieve that mandate or that goal and objective.
Brent mentioned earlier the unique kind of environment that the trails are built on and mm-hmm. needing to adapt kind of the IMBA trail building standards to those local regions. And it's something that in this podcast, I've always strived to, this podcast is not about trail building in the sense that like we all have different dirt. We all have different forests. Some of us don't even have forests. Some of us are out in the open. But we have a lot of similarities in the other aspects of what it means to be advocates and trail associations and committees and that type of thing. And we often come across the same issues and the same problems. And the goal of this podcast has always been kind of sharing ideas and sharing solutions. It sounds like you've got a great perspective that has taken you kind of around Canada, but also globally and around the world. Do you see kind of trails, are we kind of all kind of in the same boat when it comes to trails, whether it's in Finland or in Canada, or are there major differences with trying to manage a trail network?
You know, I think we all like to think that there's something new, unique, and novel about our trails. And usually that's the people and the geography of the trail, and very much less so the bureaucracy and the risk management and the structuring and the building and the challenges and the obstacles. Trails face numerous challenges around the world. One of the key things that we try to do at the Trail Research Hub through our blog is to break down academic articles that are published about trail systems around the world and talk about how those findings can be applied to Canadian contexts, whether that's in mountain biking, hiking, cross-country skiing, or any other type of trail-based activity. We look for ways to take research that's been conducted elsewhere and apply it to our context. And the only reason that that's possible is because a lot of the challenges and obstacles that trails face in Canada are similar to those faced elsewhere.
Mm, that's great. Well, that kind of is a great segue, because I how can people kind of stay in touch with all that stuff and all that information?
So the Trail Research Hub has a website. You can visit us at www.trailresearchhub.com. You can subscribe to our blog as well as our biannual newsletter. And you can follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at the Trail Research Hub. And you can follow me on all of those platforms, as well as LinkedIn at Kelsey M. Johansson.
And Brent, how can folks stay in touch with the Hydrocut Trails and the Waterloo Cycling Club?
Well, mainly on social media. So on Instagram, it's the Hydrocut or the _Hydrocut. And then on Facebook, it's the same handle, the Hydrocut.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, you two. This has been a wonderful conversation. It's always great to kind of get such a complimenting discussion with academia and also with a trail organization. So it's been wonderful to have both of you on here. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
This episode of the podcast was recorded on the traditional territory of the Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Musqueam, and Stolo Nations. One of my guests joined me from the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee, Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, and the Anishinaabe. My other guest joined me from the traditional territory of the Karelian and Sami. If you're curious to learn more about the traditional territory that you occupy and recreate on, then visit native-lands.ca. Like always, you can find the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Frontlines MTB. You can also join the Facebook group at Advocates on the Frontlines of MTB. You can send me an email or an audio file to info@frontlinesmtb.com. Thank you to everyone for contributing to the conversation as Frontline VIPers. Thank you to Susie, Jeff, Alexa, Jacob, and Drew for your recent donations via PayPal. To become a Frontlines VIP member, to receive early info about upcoming shows, you just need to support the show via PayPal. You can find a link in the show notes. And in the show notes, you'll also find links to the Hydrocut documentary and links to the Trail Research Hub and the Waterloo Cycling Club. Music, as always, is by Lee Rosevear. Production notes by Jennifer Pride. Artwork is created by Brandon Gallagher Watson and BGW Creative. And finally, I'm Brent Hillier. This is Frontlines. Thanks for listening, and happy trails.